Support for The Morning Show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. And we welcome you to the Tuesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Sitting across a much more important Gregory this morning, President Gregory Woodward, the president of Carthage College. But I'm sure, as all of you know who are listening today, he is not President Woodward of Carthage College all that much longer. As most people in the area are well aware, President Woodward is stepping down from the presidency to assume another position with another college, and actually will be stepping away from the office officially on about the 1st of July or so, and his successor, John Swallow, will be taking the reins. We want to seize this opportunity, and I appreciate the president making time in his busy schedule to pay what I suspect might be a last visit to the morning show, although who knows what life may bring. But I'm especially delighted that with President Woodward today is his wife, Penny Woodward, who has also been a very, very important part of the Carthage community for the time that they have been here in southeastern Wisconsin. So I'm glad this conversation can include the two of them, and we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thank you very much. It's thanks, nice to be here.
Yeah, it's nice to be here. And good it probably day. Won't be our last.
Yeah, who knows? I would hope it wouldn't be. I would hope it wouldn't be. President Woodward, before we talk about your departure, let's remember a little bit about your arrival, which was roughly 5 years ago, I think. First of all, remind our listeners where you were at that point in time and how it sort of came to be that you transplanted yourself from a different part of the country to southeastern Wisconsin and Carthage.
Yeah, it was kind of a fun story. I'll make it short, but I was the dean of the School of Music at Ithaca College, and I had just served a year as interim provost there as well. And in my role as provost, I had run a search for another dean at the School of Business at Ithaca. And we had a national figure, Jamie Farrar, who was then the president of, I think, Academic Search, then moved on to AGB Search. And he was the consultant for that search. He and I worked together. And we got to know each other pretty well, and he, being the professional that he is, got to know a little bit about my family. And the search concluded. We had a good, successful run. And then must have been 3 years later, I get a phone call, and it's Jamie Farrar saying, "So I know that your youngest child is now in college." I said, "Yes, that's true." And he said, "So Charlie's a freshman." I said, "Yes, at Ithaca." And he said, "That's great." He said, "So you're probably free to move now, aren't you?" And I said, "Well, don't know about that, but it's a thought." And he said, "If you ever thought you wanted to be a college president, and I think you should, you've got to look at this fantastic college out in Kenosha, Wisconsin, called Carthage College." And I said, "Okay, well, I never really thought about that. I wasn't looking for a job, but I'm listening." And he went on and on to tell me more about Carthage and to explain how great it was and what great situation it was in. And then at the end of the conversation, I said, "Well, what do I have to do?" And he said, "You just have to write an application letter and get a resume together and send it in." I said, "Well, when's it due?" And he said, "Tomorrow." So at that moment, I thought, he's searching pretty hard to fill his candidate pool, I think, because I was at the last tail end of it. But, you know, did what he said, steps and interviews and all kinds of conversations ensued, and here I am. And I do remember, I probably never told you this story before, Greg, but I think it was a day when Penny was, at the time, she had been teaching middle school, you know, for 32 years, and I think she might have had a day when she wasn't feeling well and she was home. And I came home, I got the phone call, and I said, "I got good and bad news for you." And I said, "The bad news is that I got the job, and the good news is that I got the job." And here we are.
Wow. Was this a long time coming as far as you were concerned? I mean, was this a change you were at all hungry for?
This was definitely not something we had anticipated. I think we thought we would retire in Ithaca. We'd been there a long time. We loved it there. I had had an opportunity after retiring from the public school music program to teach full-time at Ithaca College. Probably would have had a second year of Ithaca College had this opportunity not come up, and that was sort of a nice cap to my career there. And I remember Greg saying the good news and the bad news, and I kind of looked at him and I said, I never wanted to be the wife of a college president. And honestly, had a lot of trepidation about it, but met the Campbells and Barbara and had a chance to come. And I did have some family here at the time. Both of those two siblings are now either moved back to the East or on their way to the West Coast. So it's interesting that we're all sort of departing the Midwest at the same time. But it turned out to be an incredible journey. I had a wonderful 5 years here. People were warm and welcoming, and it was just a really nice fit. So it was one of those things that you just sort of say, well, here we go, and let's see what happens. Best foot forward, and it all worked out really nicely. So
I will tell you a story, another one, what the heck, Greg. And that is at the evening of the – I did the airport interviews, you know, the sort of confidential airport interviews, and then was invited to come to campus, as you know. And at the evening between the 2 days that I spent on campus interviewing, we had a dinner with a number of the board members and the search committee. And there was a lull in the conversation for a moment, and Tom Kiso, a longtime board member, turned to Penny and said, so what are your plans? What do you hope to do as First Lady? And I'm going to paraphrase a little bit, but Penny's response was kind of like, well, I would hope that no one would ever call me First Lady again.
You're right.
I think I stood up and walked out and said, it's been really great. Thanks for the interview.
Right. Okay.
Good luck with your search.
Yeah, I think we're finished now. I hope, Mrs. Woodward, you've noticed that I have not referred to you as First Lady through the course of this interview. I'm going to really resist the temptation because I remember you saying that with the best of humor, but that's not exactly a title that rests comfortably on your shoulders, shall we say.
It's interesting because Pastor Cara Baylor also had heard that story. And looking back, I began to realize why, you know, they called me the First Lady. And that was because it was a nice way to refer to me without having to every time say, this is the president's wife. So it sort of gave me my own identity, which was really nice. And so I became a little more tuned in with that. But Pastor Cara dubbed me Flock. She said, well, we'll just refer to you as the Flock then, the First Lady of Carthage College. So that was sort of a little interior joke, but sort of got out that I kind of liked that too. That felt more comfortable.
Excellent. President Woodward, describe to our listeners just how drastic a change this was for you, not just in terms of yourself becoming for the first time the president of an entire college, but also the fact that you were going from one school to another school, really in many ways drastically different?
That's a really good question, Greg. And I would say that the drastic difference was a little bit of a shock, and that took some getting used to. And so I am a professional, you know, musician, as you know. I spent my life teaching music. I was a composer and composition teacher for 30 years and lived inside a school of music. And at Ithaca, everything resides inside a school. So it is what we call a comprehensive college, 5 or 6 professional schools, and they kind of work in their own little silos, and together they make up a college, but it's a little bit more of a kind of independent school-based culture. And at Carthage, the unifying liberal arts nature of the institution was in some ways tricky to get a handle on. But I've always been kind of a voracious reader. I've always been a person who loved the liberal arts. I studied it like crazy now that I was in this position. I learned an awful lot about the value of a liberal arts education and how, in fact, data would show over and over and over again that graduates of liberal arts colleges do as well as, but in most cases better, than graduates of professional schools. And you can say that to the public, you know, until you're blue in the face, and they still won't quite believe it. No, that can't be true. But in fact, I will say that a very big study done recently by the New York Times and Gallup poll showed that 5 years out of college, philosophy majors were actually making a larger average salary than undergraduate physics majors. So I believed in the liberal arts. I believed in what Carthage was. I think that the core that Carthage has, and the Western heritage and the great ideas, the classes they take, the gen ed classes that every student takes, is what holds it together. It's a fabulous model for undergraduate education. I've even gone so far as to look really closely at the great books colleges like St. John's, and I think that's a fabulous education. And so it was a change. I had to sort of get away from my – this is a professional operation we are in as a school. We train and educate students to do these six things. I had to get away from that, and I actually think it's broadened me and taught me an awful lot about the value of education, the value of expanding one's mind. You've heard me say a million times the true value of education is to ensure that the inside of your head is an interesting place to spend the rest of your life. And so I totally bought it fully. I will say that on the other half of your question, that you're going to be surprised perhaps at the answer. While the president's job is more complex and filled with a lot more, with a wider range of activities, and filled with what may seem like a lot of extra stress, there is one incredibly powerful aspect to it that has guided my 5 years and makes the job, in fact, so enjoyable and in some ways easier than other jobs I've had. And that is, no matter what, every decision you make, every initiative you undertake, every goal you set has only one purpose: the health and vitality and long-range sustainability of the college. And so instead of having to think, you know, in the weeds deeply about every little thing, the answer is a single question, right? I mean, at the end of every conversation or decision is, did I just do something which made this college healthier, better, a better student experience, which makes it more sustainable for the long-range future? Mm. And sometimes as a president, you know, as a leader of anything, you've got to make some tough decisions, you've got to make some tough choices. But if you can answer that question affirmatively, you got to feel good, you know, when you go to bed at night. Mm.
I want to share a brief story about you from the day that you were rather officially welcomed to campus. And so this was an event that occurred in the Campbell Student Union. And this is the event where the Campbells ceremoniously passed off to you these red blazers, right, for you to wear, the proud colors of Carthage. I didn't actually meet you face-to-face until the very end of that event, and you two were just tirelessly greeting all kinds of different people, and it was really fun. So I walked up to you towards the very end with Jim Ripley, the instrumental man at Carthage, for what I thought would be a real quick chat, because I thought, surely you guys are ready to go home. And no, you were just revving up and still ready to go, and we had a really nice chat. But the story is really when Kevin Crosby walks up, who is from the science division of the college, and it sort of sounded like he was picking up a last thread from maybe a conversation you two had already had at this event as he was heading out the door, and the two of you began talking, and I was just astounded at the breadth of knowledge that you had about his field, which was physics, and just thinking, where does this guy save all of this? And I'm reminded of that because of what you were just saying, that you were going into a school of a very different nature and no longer in your own home turf of music. And yet, just in that little maybe minute and a half exchange with Professor Crosby, I was realizing, boy, this guy knows about a lot more than just music. Is that kind of a lifelong aspect of who you are?
Well, you know, it's funny, Greg. I remember that conversation because I believe your wife was there and Jim Ripley's wife was there and Penny was there. And we just had like a little music love fest, you know, for a little while. And it was a great conversation. And it made Penny and I feel really at home to be around the musicians. And we look forward to working and meeting with all the music faculty. I will say that I've always been a voracious reader. Spent a lot of time with my three children, reading them, you know, to sleep at night. And I'm a very curious person. I think I've always been curious. I also went into music because it was the thing that I did as a young person that I had the most fun with, and people seemed to say to me that, you know, that I was really good at. And so I didn't go to college as a music major right away. I was going to be an English major. I thought maybe I wanted to do some writing. Frankly, I was also playing soccer, you know, at a Division I level, and so I was really focused on that. And it wasn't until my sophomore year in college when my mother turned to me and said, "What are you going to major in?" And I said, "Well, I don't know." You know, I kind of tiptoed around. She said, "Well, you should do music. You're crazy. That's what you've always done. That's what you love. That's what you're good at." And I kind of gave her a kiss and said, "You think it's okay?" And she said, "Yes." So, you know, then I wound my way into this, right, and did music. And so a long, long life in music, and I couldn't have asked for a better choice or a better life. But I think I would have had other choices. It wasn't like it was my only passion or the only thing I cared about. I think I was good at it. I loved it. I can't imagine, making a different choice. But it wasn't the only thing. And I will say something else. I don't think this is being egotistical, but I just happen to be lucky that I have a very good memory. I can read things one time, and I've kind of got it. And so in interviews and in speeches and in sessions, I can recall numbers and data and facts. It's just a thing. I don't, you know, it's not ego-driven. I could just do it.
It's actually very annoying. He remembers everything. It's incredible. It really, truly is incredible. You know, I mean, facts out of the air that you think, where did that come from?
Right, which file box up in his head has that?
Exactly, right.
But I have to read it.
Right.
You know, it's amazing how many musicians are visual learners, not oral learners.
Right, right. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with the Woodwards, Gregory and Penny Woodward. President Woodward, of course, the president of Carthage College, but only until, let's say, the last day of June or the first day of July. At that point in time, his successor, John Swalla, will be taking over the reins of Carthage College. So we're taking this opportunity today to talk with the Woodwards about their 5 years at Carthage. So, President Woodward, it was interesting. You came to Carthage in the wake of the enormous legacy of President Gregory Campbell, who was at Carthage for 25 years. And of course, as most people know, President Campbell came to Carthage at a time when the institution was really teetering on the brink. It was in a very, very difficult place, as were a lot of small private schools at the time. And President Campbell, through various means, was able to turn the college around in really extraordinary fashion. I wonder if you could just say a word about what it was like to follow in the footsteps of somebody who had left such a deep imprint on the college for such a long time. And going forth from there as the new president of Carthage, how conscious were you of who he was and who you were and what this next chapter should be?
Yeah, I think I was quite conscious of it, Greg. So one of the first things I did, it's symbolic, I know, but I, you know, changed the office furniture, changed the colors, redecorated a little bit just to make it my own because it really was Greg's place. He and I overlapped for 1 month. I started on July 1st. He ended on August 4th, and so we worked together for 1 month. I moved around from different offices for that month because different people were on vacations. But I thought really hard about what Greg had done and how amazing it was and who he was. And I thought hard about what were the, and this is not a criticism or a negative comment, where were the cracks in Greg's vision and in Greg's personal interests that I could help fill in? Because we only have so much bandwidth to set our eyes out. And what I mean by vision is not the goal-setting vision, but your literal kind of vision. So what would Greg cast his eyes upon regularly and work hard at? And were there parts of the college that he hadn't spent as much time with? And so I tried to think about that very hard. I tried to think about management style and to see whether or not I could infuse the college with a slightly different style, just because I think that's healthy. But I will say that all along, I've known that following a kind of a legend like that was going to be tricky, that I would probably have a window of time in which I could get a lot of things done and kind of, as I said at the time, and I'd say it now, I'd kind of be a disruptor a little bit, make people think twice about their choices and the way that they've always done things. But that energy would probably also run out at some point, and you would either stay and build a more regular continuity, or you would find yourself without without kind of the power to make things happen. And so I will tell you, it's funny. I'm going to the University of Hartford. I'm sure we'll talk about that later. The president there is retiring after 19 years. So I'm doing it again. And I know that I'll have a window of time in which I'll think hard about how to change things there and what it needs and to be kind of disruptive. I think that at Carthage I have been disruptive to make people question that their normal routines, to think about things they do. We have had to think a little bit about being a more modern institution just because no matter how fabulous a person could possibly be, and Greg was about as close to that as you could get probably, right? 25 years later, your idea of what the college can be was probably pretty solidified in his head. And sometimes when you're in a job that long, it's hard then to get moved off of you know, the square. And so I thought my job was to move people off of some sort of rather traditional squares. Adding nursing was one of those things, right? We'd never thought about adding a really hardcore professional degree like that before. It's a good thing we did. It's boosted our enrollment these last couple of years. The ways that we worked with faculty governance, the ways that we thought about the shaping of the leadership group in the cabinet, on and on, many, many things in which I thought it's just time to do it differently. And I will say that sometimes I actually thought rather intentionally, how would it be different? Just because it would shake people up, right? Get out of your comfort zone, think differently, keep being fresh, keep being inspired. It's not ever good, right, in any kind of business to get too comfortable. And so that was a role I thought I had to play. And I don't know, I'm kind of an A-type personality. It probably came rather naturally.
To create discomfort.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I'll do it again in my new job. I told him, I said, I will come here and be a disruptor. I'm going to be somebody who's just going to ask you questions. Why do you do it that way?
Right. And it's interesting because you, of course, you would be the first to say you came to Carthage at a point when Carthage was doing extremely well.
Yes.
So this was not a school that was in any sort of dire straits, at least not really in that sense of the word at all. So when you came to, in a sense, disrupt things, you were disrupting a place that could have felt fairly complacent and confident about the future. And it seems to me that makes it even trickier to do it successfully then.
Yeah, very tricky. But I would say that had to be done because the comfort was around a institution that, because of its success, I won't say it become complacent because, you know, it's a rather small staff at Carthage, faculty and staff included, and they work really hard. And so no one's been sitting around being lazy. I mean, certainly not ever would imply that. This is an incredible group of hardworking, dedicated people. But that comfort could lead to a lack of staying current and relevant. And with the higher education landscape being what it is, the incredible fight for enrollment and for high school students to come to your school being what it is, Carthage needed to start to adapt a little bit. And so I say this now lovingly. So take this lovingly, all right, friends? But when I came to Carthage, I thought I had come to a place that seemed like it was 10 or 15 or 20 years living in the past. And operations, systems, software, technology, I just thought that it had grown so nicely to a place that it was where it was working well, but that was a scary place to sit.
Right, in this day and age.
In this day and age.
This is as good a time as any to ask you about the extensive contact that you would have and sometimes collaboration with the presidents of other colleges, including what we would think of as Carthage's sister institutions. But beyond that, of course, you have contact with all kinds of different college presidents, including, of course, the other two institutions of higher learning right here in Kenosha that we'll talk about, I hope, at some point. But in those contacts, of course, you can learn a lot, including often you learn a lot of sobering things about schools not unlike Carthage that are struggling mightily for one reason or another. Just say a word about what you have learned from those sort of connections and contacts and what kind of difference that has made in terms of some of these choices you've made in order to try to keep Carthage moving forward as powerfully as possible.
Yeah, so I will say, Greg, that looking at other small smaller private liberal arts colleges like Carthage. And Carthage belongs to a group called the CIC, the Conference of Independent Colleges. And that and AACNU, the American Association of Colleges and Universities, WACU, the Wisconsin Association of Independent Colleges and Universities, our athletic league, the CCIW, the LECNA group, the Lutheran Education National College University group. So lots and lots of sessions with lots and lots of college presidents. Believe it or not, college presidents don't usually stay places 25 years. The national average now is 5, used to be 7. And so having had, you know, Harold Lentz for 24 and then Greg Campbell for 25, Carthage is not used to that kind of change. But looking out over the landscape I was in of my colleagues, they're moving around a lot and changing a lot. And I would say that most colleges and most presidents that I talked about or learned about that are like Carthage were somewhat ahead of the curve or our curve in taking some bold steps. The great thing about Carthage is that it was in such a solid place and continues to be in such a solid place that it can, and we did, kind of sit back and watch how some of these bold steps played out, because we weren't in any kind of desperation. Mm. And so you could say, wow, what, they dropped their tuition 30%. How'd that work? They changed their financial aid model by that amount. How much did that work? What do they do about retention? What do they do about the programs they're offering? Colleges that were all women, you know, started to be, you know, coeducational. Colleges that were generally liberal arts colleges started adding, you know, health science degrees. Colleges that were small and relying on undergraduate enrollment in a place where perhaps a more rural setting where the population wasn't so big started to take on adult learners and do certificate programs and online learning. I think your alma mater is probably in that same situation to a certain degree, right? Having to look for alternate forms of revenue. So we could kind of watch and see how they did. I think we've picked the best of those. I think doing nursing was a great choice. I think we've tried really hard and worked really hard at our enrollment tactics, our philosophies, and our strategies to maintain enrollment. I will brag for a moment and say that I leave Carthage with the highest enrollment ever, the highest retention ever, the highest graduation rate ever, the biggest diversity ever. And I did say I would double the endowment when I came 5 years ago. It was $59 million, and I think a few weeks ago it was at 113. So I was really close to doubling it. So Carthage is in a great place, and we've chosen very carefully with the advantage of being able to see what's out there and what works. I'm sorry to say that many small colleges, not Carthage, but many smaller colleges will disappear.
Right. I think this is foremost in my mind at the moment because we recently had the transfer scholarship interviews. So really gifted young people from all kinds of different colleges across the country come to Carthage and for interviews and write an essay and so on. And then a select few are given really generous transfer scholarships to transfer to Carthage. One of the young men that I interviewed currently goes to a small college in Indiana that is closing its doors at the end of this school year. Wow. And this young, you know, big brawny baseball player, you could just see the pain and in the corner of his eyes as he talked about what it's like for your own school to close. And I just felt this pain in the pit of my stomach for him and everybody associated with that school and anybody associated with any school that has to. It's just one of the saddest things ever. And I should think it, you as someone who watches all of this even more closely, surely feel that even more acutely, I should think.
It's so hard, and you see, as you started this conversation by talking about presidents. I mean, you see those presidents at the conferences and at sessions. I mean, they are beat down. I mean, they just look like they've been through a war, and they're emotional and distraught. And it's happening more than people think. It's not just the ones that are closing. Most of the colleges are just really having a hard time. And so there was a moment a couple of years ago at one of these big CIC conferences in San Diego. And there was about 350 colleges in this group, and I believe they started one of the sessions by saying, everybody stand up. Now sit down if you made your missed your enrollment by 100 this year, or if you missed your enrollment by 50, or if you missed it by, you know, 10, or if you made it. At the end, when they said who made their enrollment, there was only a handful of us standing up. Mm. I was standing.
Wow.
And then they did the same thing with budget. How many people made their budget? How many people went under their budget by certain amounts at the end? how many people had a good budget. I was standing, and we had a net revenue budget. Huh. You know, for, and we still had one for 27 straight years. Carthage is an amazingly well-built and strong place.
We could probably spend the rest of the time talking about this, and I don't think we have that time, but in a nutshell, to what do you attribute, aside from your astute leadership, which is certainly an ingredient there, but I mean, there must be more to it than that. Why do you think Carthage is doing so well at a point in time when so many schools like it are struggling?
A couple of reasons, some romantic and some pretty mundane. And this might be, what I'm going to say first might fall into both categories. There's a big lake on the side of the campus, and kids come, and we ask them why they came, and I have to tell you that it kind of hurts us, but the answer very often is, well, it's the lake. I mean, look at that lake. I mean, who wouldn't want to come here?
Duh.
So thank you, Kenosha, for this incredible parkland that the college sits on. That's a great thing. Secondly, we have an unbelievable faculty, just terrific faculty who care about our students as individuals. That is the number one thing that students remember from their college years. There's a 30-year poll. The biggest poll in college history was done a couple of years ago, and they said, if I found a mentor who cared about me as an individual, my college experience was great. Carthage is, as I said before, a small and efficient staff. And so we actually run pretty lean. I've been asked to maintain a less than 50%, you know, compensation level as part of our annual operating budget, and we've done that all 5 years. That's a strength for the college, even though it makes it hard on the people there. But they're up for it. They're terrific. I would also say that personal touch that the faculty are able to provide extends to the staff as well. Right? I mean, everybody, the coaches, the people that work in the bursar, the people that work in student life. You know, we talk about the Carthage family a lot. I think if you're a student, you feel that. You feel it really palpably. You feel like there's people to talk to. There's an atmosphere that feels warm and safe and empowering.
Penny Woodward, I want to draw you in at this point. As your husband has spoken so eloquently about the Carthage community. Speaking of eloquence, I really thought you spoke so beautifully at the baccalaureate service on the eve of commencement this year. And I thought you had something really important to say about what the Carthage community has meant to you in terms of your own journey over the last few years. Could you just say a word? I don't mean for you to reiterate all those remarks from baccalaureate, but I think it would be really nice if our listeners could just get a sense of what you shared with us that night so memorably.
Well, thanks. My experience has been memorable, and part of that is because I was terrified to not know anybody when I moved here, and so it literally fell on my shoulders to sort of get out and find a way to meet people on the campus, to be involved in the campus. I had gone to a Lutheran conference of Lutheran colleges, and there was a very young woman there who was a president's wife, and I don't remember what the school was at the time, but we were talking, and she was probably 10 years younger than I am, and she said, you know, I made the decision that I was not just going to be a supportive figure for my husband. I was actually going to become involved with the life of the college. And I think you can go two ways as a first lady, and one is to become involved and one is to sort of continue to have your own life. And so I chose to become involved. And every time I sort of put a hand out there, someone grabbed it and said, come on in, you know, whether it was students, when I got involved with the Carthage Relay for Life, or whether it was Cara Baylor at the chapel saying, come and talk about your spiritual journey to the students, or whether it was alums like Clayton Diskerud, you know, becoming part of my team, or the guys from the maintenance department getting involved in Walk a Mile in Her Shoes. I really tried to make an attempt to meet everyone on campus as much as I could. I used to have lunch with the EVS women, the environmental services women, and talked to them, and I learned a great deal from them. I got involved with the schools in the community, Lance Middle School and Washington Middle School, working with their band departments. And I worked with Women and Children's Horizons. And every time I sort of took a chance to try something new, I was welcomed into that community. And even to the point of taking classes on campus. I took Western Heritage with all the freshmen, which was scary because they put
honors
me in
section.
Honors class. Oh, and those kids were really sharp. And I took a costume design class, which was great fun. And we had a flash mob on campus. And so I found it to be a very welcoming community. But I also got sort of a bird's eye view of many different levels of what I sort of referred to as the Carthage machine. And some of the levels where you don't necessarily get a chance to see what's going on. And there were, you know, as much as we talk about the Carthage family, there were definitely places where they felt like they weren't part of that family. And so it was a nice opportunity for me to see what I could do, you know, to help that. And there was also a feeling, I think, among a lot of the women on the campus that Carthage for a long time had been sort of a male-dominated place, in that a lot of the higher positions were held by men. And so over time, I think one of the things that we realized was that we had some really capable women. And I think, to Greg's credit, he was able to change that. We brought women into, you know, some leadership roles. We changed the diversity of the college. And so everybody started to feel like they were being seen, I think, in a different way. And that became very fun. We also did just some plain old social things on the campus. I had a stitching group of women that came to the house. Everyone was invited, but and it started to move from being a, you know, people that stitched to people that made jewelry to people that just came for the social atmosphere, and brought a lot of women from different parts of the campus together who had never gotten to know each other. And I was really delighted to hear when they had a little going away party for me that one of the things they really want to do is to try to keep that going. I think I was sort of able to open Trinity House. I didn't want it to be like a building where nobody got to go ever. And so the women from Women and Children's Horizons that I worked with Jean Preston and Annette Dremond, we did a writing thing, came out, and we wrote out in the sunroom at the campus at our house and looked out on the lake, and it gave us a very sort of calm and peaceful experience. It was difficult for them to get there because it meant transporting them, and you know, some were in wheelchairs and everything else, but it was a great thing. It was, I think, a nice way to, again, sort of take the mystery away from what the president's house was all about. We had a bunch of students there over the course of the years, and I think that was also part of the tradition. But just different crowds of people than had necessarily been there in the past. So that was a really nice experience, and as I say, just so warmly received every time I, you know, threw an idea out there. And I tend to be a pretty low-key person, and so I think in the parades, particularly when I would get out in silly costumes and, you know, just kind of be a wacko, I guess you could say, people felt a little more comfortable to let their hair down and, you know, sort of follow suit. And I think that produced some really nice feelings. I was afraid that, you know, I was going to have to change who I was, and decided I couldn't really do that, and realized that people felt comfortable with who I was. And so it was, you know, it was sort of a happy coexistence, I think, for me.
I like that. President Woodward, that brings to mind one of the trademarks of your own personality, which is namely your wit, and the fact that most of the time at the events over which you preside, there's a whole lot more laughter than there typically might be. I mean, it's just, it's part and parcel of who you are, and it's part of what gave so many of these events just a unique flavor, and certainly different from what they were before. I just wonder if you sort of would be conscious of the role of humor in these even formal occasions, and if that was something where you were consciously trying to use humor in a certain way, or if that's just who you irrepressibly are, and that's just what these events ended up just being.
Yeah, I think a little bit of both, Greg, because we get wrapped up in what we do, and I think sometimes it's great to unwrap that and to just, as Penny just said, kind of let your hair down, be a little wacky sometimes, realize everything we do isn't so serious. We're involved in you know, turning 18-year-olds into 22-year-olds. I mean, what could be more fun than that? And fun is in that sentence, right? I mean, it's fun. And so I think I think it's who I am, but I also think that those are moments that were meant to be less formal, less sort of standoffish. And in fact, when you share humor and like that with people, it is a bonding experience. To laugh together is really powerful, right? And so instead of just having a ceremony where I'd say, now 20 years of service, thank you, Greg Berg. we sang Take the Seventh Inning Stretch. We sang Take Me Out to the Ball Game, right? It's more fun. The other thing I said when I came, and I'll always believe this, is that you know, it's a little 60s in me, but the journey is just as important as the ending, and in some ways more important, because the ending might just be a moment in time. The journey is the whole time. Mm. And so, as I said when I started, you know, there are I've had conductors and coaches over the years who have, you know, gotten to a good result, but by being a little bit hard on people. And it's just way more fun to have fun with it along the way and get to the same result, but have it be fun. Mm. So it was intentional a lot of the time. It is partly who I am. I may have overdone it sometimes, I have to say. But I think it's loosened people up. Remember Henry Kissinger's line about college staff and faculty? You know, why are college faculty, you know, arguments so hard? And the answer was, sadly, you know, because it's so little at stake. And and you know, it's just, you know, you can't sweat everything we do. And as a leader of an institution, you know, the buck kind of stops with you. And it is amazing how much time one spends undoing rumors and hearsay and the hallway conversations and the telephone game and saying, no, actually, you know, that's not really true, but it's a nice story.
We're not changing Carthage's colors from red to blue.
No, we're really not. You know, when I said jokingly in my first session with the students that, you know, we should use the lake more, let's buy a boat. And then it appeared in the student newspaper, tuition has gone up, the president's buying a boat. I was like, no, I'm not really buying a boat, you know. Let's have fun.
Yeah.
I mean, you of all people know this. You're a musician. And by the way, I have to say, because I'm not going to get a chance later, that you are one of the crowning jewels of Carthage, Greg. And we're just so proud of you and who you are, your talents, your skills, your intelligence, your dedication to the school, your wide range of activities. You represent the best of Carthage and are just a real gift to the college. So thanks
for
being
here.
Well, you're kind to say so.
No,
if you say any
true.
More, I'm going to have to cut the mic off here. But thank you. Slipping in right next to you to say a quick word is someone who knows a lot about what it means to wear the mantle of presidency. This is the president of Gateway Technical College, Brian Albrecht.
Yay.
Whose offices are right across the hall.
My hero.
And,
Brian.
And I'm really pleased that he can slip in to say a quick hello here before we finish up.
Well, it's so important that we take time to just celebrate the leadership that Greg has provided for our community, not only Carthage, which is a remarkable institution, and, you know, Gateway and Carthage just have such great synergy back and forth, including you, Greg. I heard the recognition of your leadership. Now you're at Gateway, too, doing some work here, but it's just really been a tremendous journey we've been on, and a short one, a few years, but I tell you, we've done so much. The articulation agreement that was just recently signed, and all the work that you do to help support our community groups, and including the Mahone Fund, the United Way, all the different entities that you've touched in our community. And I shared with Greg when I first heard the news that he'd be leaving our community that not only will we miss him here in our community, but I will miss him deeply personally as a friend, and hope that I have a chance to come and visit and see your new university and celebrate with you again all the great things that you're going to do for kids and for adults over on the East Coast. So it's really a pleasure to be with you this morning and just to say thank you on behalf of the Gateway community.
Mm. I got to say, one of the things that I hope people in this part of the state and Midwest never take for granted is this cordial, cooperation between these three schools, Parkside, Carthage, Gateway, it's just phenomenal.
It is pretty special, and I've had a chance to work in all areas of the state of Wisconsin, and I still think it's so unique. And it started actually with Jack Keating. Jack, when he was at Parkside, he reached out to me when I first came to our community and said, we need to work together, Brian. And then, of course, Greg Campbell was such a strong advocate of partnerships and helped us establish what we're in today, our Bioscience Center. And then when Greg came, just kind of carried that tradition on. And Debbie Ford has been remarkable in keeping us on track. I mean, we're probably the two worst ones. She's always like, when are we going to meet again?
Next breakfast.
Yeah. I don't know if you noticed, but we rotate breakfast meetings. So it's either over at Carthage or Parkside or Gateway. And we always try to one-up each other, you know. So, you know, we got to have a little bit fancier breakfast when we do meet. And
you guys have a culinary institute.
Yes,
know,
that's
which
right.
Which helps a little bit.
Yeah, they should be fancy. No, well, we appreciate you popping in to say hello, and it's been fun to be an observer in the close relationship between the two schools and the two of you. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, well, thank you for making time for a quick hello. Brian Albrecht,
my
the pleasure. President of Gateway Technical College. President Woodward, we need to talk quickly about where you're headed from here and what this next chapter looks like for you.
Yeah, you know, this is a very bittersweet moment, and it's getting more bittersweet by the day. You've seen me in a couple public events. I'm not holding it together real well these days. Penny, luckily, is better than me. They should, frankly, just hire her as the president.
She's the rock.
She is. You are not kidding about that. But I will say that not to put us into a sad place at all. But you know, it's been a tough year for us. Penny's been through a lot in her health, and I have my mother and an older brother that are both in very bad health and won't be with us very long. And our two daughters live on the East Coast. Penny's brother, sister, dad, other sister, my whole family, everybody lives on the East Coast. And so in this time, frankly, of some need in our family, we just felt when this call came that we kind of needed to pay some attention to it. No intention of looking for a job or ever leaving Carthage. I thought I would retire here. But our circumstances just simply are calling us, frankly, home. And, you know, when you face some moments of looking your mortality in the eye, you have to stop and think and realize that I realized, and I think Penny and I together, that being visitors in your families and the people's lives that you care about most is one thing, but actually being in their lives is different. And that's what we're headed to do. I will also say, without sounding too fatalistic here, that it was literally in the waiting room of Penny's, one of her a surgery she had this year, in which I got the call from this headhunter saying, you know, there's this job you might want to look for. As you can imagine, my emotions were a tumble at the moment, and I listened and thought maybe it's a sign in some way. So we are very unhappy leaving, but we're also excited to be doing what we're doing.
Of course, absolutely. And headed, of course, for a very fine school. And I should think it also helps that you are handing off Carthage to John Swallow, feeling very good about where the school is and where the school is headed.
John Swallow is an absolutely fabulous choice. Everyone's going to love him. He's an exceptionally bright person. He's a mathematician, went to college when he was 15, you know, has double master's degrees and a PhD from Yale. Taught at Davidson for a long time, a really best practice, you know, fabulous peer for Carthage. Was at Sewanee, the University of the South, for a long time. He seems to me so far to be, you know, from what I know, a very kind, gentle person, exceptionally bright. I'm just elated with the choice and feel so good handing this seat off to him.
Right. Well, and as unhappy as we are to say goodbye to the two of you, it's a little easier to say goodbye knowing that that the search has resulted in such a strong candidate to whom you are turning over the reins. So,
and that's a sign for the college, isn't it? They were able to attract. I mean, this whole process, the search was incredible. 100 applicants, fabulous semifinalists and finalists, a number of people that would have been great choices. So kudos to Carthage. You know, it's in such a good place that they were able to get national applicants of some real great renown to come here.
Well, we thank you for all that you've done to put Carthage where it is at this point in time. President Gregory Woodward and Penny Woodward, so great to have both of you here. Thank you for making time for this in your busy schedules. And President Brian Albrecht, I'm glad you could step across the hall to offer your greetings and thanks as well. Very best wishes to both of you.
Thanks so much, Greg. It's been a great run.
Tomorrow on the morning show, comedian Paula Poundstone, among several other interviews. And on Thursday, Kate Jerome joins us from the Horticulture Department here at Gateway Technical College. Here, among